sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Day is new, and everyone is waiting on you.
So, screaming headline on Tuesday. Screaming headline, Pennsylvania passes severance tax. Evidently on Monday, the Republicans in the State House, they voted along party lines in the committee to, you know, pass through a severance tax. Except it wasn't really a severance tax. It was just to change the name of the impact fee to a severance tax. And they were calling it a rechristening. A rechristening. We're just having a rechristening. It's going to be wonderful. It's not going to bring in any more money. I mean, it's not going to solve our budget problems, but it'll get rid of that pesky problem of saying Pennsylvania doesn't have a severance tax. How I guess, one, how nuts do they think they are, and how dumb do they think we are? Wow. Anyway, here to talk about that, and let's bang around a couple of other things. Our good friend, Dr. Steven Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here, Rick.
So we've got a severance tax.
Yeah, no, if it doesn't walk like a duck and it doesn't talk like a duck, it's not a duck. Yeah, it's not a severance tax. So
darn it.
So close. Therefore, we don't get the $500 million on the way to $1 billion a year we would get from a real severance tax. So if their action equaled their words, then actually we'd be a long way towards solving the state's extended budget deficit in a real way. But, of course, since their deeds don't match their distortions, then we're still in the same hole we've been in terms of the budget deficit and burning the furniture to heat the house and, taking money that's meant for infrastructure or meant for the environment and pretending like you don't have to worry about having an infrastructure next year or having an environment next year, you know. So it's crazy.
And, it is crazy. But here's the thing. I mean, again, you look at all the gimmicks, and you know, we've been talking about this for a while, all the smoke and mirrors, all the gimmickry, all of this stuff. This just another one of those things that, you know, at some point, don't you have to look to the leadership and go, there's something wrong with you to allow, you know, something like this to go through? Because it didn't do anything other than make me question their ability to govern.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't. There were some rumors floating around today that, and no one seems to know what's really being discussed, that they might actually increase the impact fee as well as lying about what it is. Because again, this is pretty weedy stuff, but we have a fee, an impact fee on shale drilling that's a per well amount.
Right.
But a severance tax by definition and what exists in all the other states with a lot of gas is you take a portion of the value of the gas that's pumped, and like West Virginia gets 5% of that amount of money. And the problem, of course, with our impact fee is that even as prices recover, even as production continues to grow very rapidly, so the value of the gas pumped is the price times the amount produced. And if both of those are going up, which they are now, suddenly you're looking at a large pile of money and a bonanza for the gas companies, and it's lunacy to not get a portion of that money to fund Pennsylvania's budget.
Right. And I think most people, Steve, think it's like a sales tax. The more they pull out of the ground, the more they pay. Is that what we're talking about?
That's exactly how it works. The total value of sales, and we get, you know, it's talking about 5% of that. Our sales tax is 6%. In Philly and Pittsburgh, they actually pay another percent on top of that. So, you know, a 5% sales tax in effect on gas production. And again, small enough that it makes really no difference to the amount of investment and amount of job creation associated with that industry. Small enough also because it's, again, every other state with a lot of gas already has something like this. So we're not at any kind of competitive disadvantage, even though that's a somewhat exaggerated argument. So yeah, so it's again, it's they're stuck on a couple things. They're stuck on still thinking that shrinking the size of government is the most important problem, which it's not. You know, people want middle class jobs. They want education funded. They want the cost of college to not be going through the roof, so that people don't graduate with enormous amounts of debt that hang over them for decades as adults, right? So they, but they're still, you know, their right wing ideology says the problem is taxes and the size of government, and which hasn't actually increased in Pennsylvania in 30-40 years, and they're just wrong, and so they're not addressing the inequality that really matters to people. They're not investing in the things that will give people better jobs in the future, like education, or raise living standards in the state, like infrastructure investments. It's just they're off base. So they're again, Mark Steer, as you know, likes to talk about Pennsylvania's investment deficit. That's the real deficit we have, because we're shortchanging the future everywhere we can. And this budget is that they're trying to get through the House, where we raid every pile of money set aside to do something special, worthwhile, like protect the environment, like invest in like multimodal infrastructure. I mean, you know, a lot of your audience knows the truck drivers out there. There's a revolution in logistics that's taking place in this country, and Pennsylvania's in the middle of it because we're between lots of places that want goods and lots of places that produce goods, and it's idiocy to, when that's part of your economic advantage, you're crazy to have a second-rate infrastructure. And multimodal, again, it's a big part of where it's at in terms of going from trains to trucks. And you could give this speech much better than I could, Rick. But
here's the thing. I mean, the fact that our infrastructure is so pathetic, for those who fear the future of automated trucks and automated cars, the fact that our infrastructure is so bad, and you ask any truck driver, one of the worst in the country, we're not going to be anywhere near that technology, because, you know, as I talk to people who are in this field, they say, you know, you've got to have good infrastructure with lines on the roads and actual the ability for the automated vehicle to know where it's at and follow a proper path. We don't have that.
Yeah. So, I mean, to the extent that shippers can do it, we're setting things up so that they'll, you know, they'll go around Pennsylvania, not through Pennsylvania, you know, whenever they have a choice, which is crazy. But that's
since
the way
you brought
it is.
That up, and I understand there was a to-do on Monday and Tuesday talking about just that, the automated trucking and all of this stuff. Tell me what happened.
So I wasn't there, but obviously we worked with some of the folks who were there, and one of the key things, the whole conference was about. I mean, there is this national kind of excitement, certainly among tech firms and logistics firms, about automated vehicles. You know, it may not really be driverless trucks. you need it. There's lots of transitional stages, and lots of people are saying you're going to have the driver still to be part of loading and unloading and service and stuff like that. One thing that happened is it's like 300 plus people. A lot of engineers, a lot of policy people, and turns out that there's been a state process for sort of convening stakeholders and thinking about this that's going back a year or two now. And guess who's the only group that hasn't been part of that process?
Labor.
There you go. Labor.
Because they're look. I mean, you can't be at the table when you're on the menu, Steve.
Yeah, well, fair enough. It's just So that's disappointing in the extreme. Which is, again, there's all this elite anxiety about what about the poor truck drivers? But then you forget to include them in the discussion about the regulations and the process and the phase in. Which means no one's sitting there saying that. Well, however we do this. You know, like in social democratic countries, in European countries, when you have stuff like this, you think about how do you make the people hurt by the technological transition? How do you make them whole? You know, but how do you make sure that they can retrain for another job? But the bigger issue, actually, because I think you're, to me, and again, Frank Snyder, the Secretary of Treasury of the AFL-CIO, got a chance to speak on one of the panels. So he underscored to people that, you know, working people and their union should be, you know, at the table in this discussion. So hopefully that'll be remedied, at least to some extent, going forward. But I think the other point that Frank drove home is that, again, there's this discussion that's kind of it's an elite discussion, and it really is divorced from the reality of truck driving, which again you and a lot of your audience know about, which is people are wringing their hands about, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now, what's going to happen to the poor truck drivers that are going to lose their jobs? Well, maybe they're not going to lose. Well, maybe they're going to lose them. Maybe they're not going to lose them because, again, partly because we don't have the infrastructure as you talked about to take advantage of the technology. But the other reason about that they might not lose them quite so quickly is because truck drivers make so little money now that you know, it's not as cost effective to use these advanced technologies, because truck drivers, you know, in effect are making $10 an hour if you're lucky in some cases, right? Including so-called independent contractors. And so the other point Frank made is that you know, if you really have concerns about truck drivers, well, before you get to the issue of lots of people losing their jobs, we need to you need a reality check. You need to understand that long haul truck drivers make about half what they made per hour now that they made in the 1970s. That's 40 years ago, right?
Yeah.
You're taking a real middle class job back when we had regulation, back when the Teamsters were strong, and you have turned that into a low wage job where people have to work unsafe and unhealthy numbers of hours, 50, 60, 70, to make a decent living.
Wow, you're off there. Try 70.
All right.
And then try 80, and then try running two long books to get you to 90.
Wait, but the people in this room and in this discussion, and the people, again, who are sort of wringing their hands about the hypothetical loss of truck drivers when the trucks drive themselves, it's like, Wait a minute. You know, can we do a primal scream here and say, how about doing something this year, this decade, for the truck drivers who've been screwed for 40 years?
Yep.
How about that, right? And again, there are things you can do. So this is one of my favorite recent rants, because I want this to be on the agenda of Governor Wolf's middle class task force. It's like, you know, again, there are, across the country, independent contractors. So people who really work for one customer, but the company doesn't want to pay unemployment, doesn't want to pay workers' comp, you know, doesn't want to be subject to the minimum wage, you know, right? All the reasons that companies decide they don't want to call people who are really employees. And finally, there are a bunch of cases that have made their way through the courts and that are making way through their courts to sort of somewhat trim companies' sails around that stuff. Like, a lot of these are in California, for example. And so, again, Pennsylvania ought to be, hey, we've got the third most truck drivers. I mean, even though we've only got the sixth most people at this point, we've got the third most truck drivers. And that goes back to the point that we're between lots of people who want stuff and lots of people who make stuff. And so let's be on the cutting edge of, let's pass a state law that strengthens labor and industry's hand in terms of enforcing laws against people being misclassified as independent contractors. Let's give truckers low interest loans so that rather being, you know, stuck on a lease to not own deal with a company that's charging them an unfair interest rate, given how low interest rates really are, you know, let's help them actually own that truck if they actually are an owner operator or genuine independent contractor.
Wow, those are ideas that I haven't heard. Because look, you know, because the horror stories that you hear out there of people who've been stuck in these lease contracts and these people who have just been screwed over by these companies. And you're right, as deregulation crushed labor in the LTL market, especially where I'm familiar, wages have not just stagnated, they've gone down. In fact, I tell the story all the time, Steve. I made more money back in the mid-80s than they're making now doing the exact job, and not with any of your economic gimmickry or inflation models or whatever. Dollar for dollar, I made more over 30 years ago.
Well, that's it. And that's exactly one of the stories Frank told, because the last job he had before he became a full-time union guy in the steel industry was actually driving a truck. And he said he made more then, which was probably in the 80s, than people make today. So, again, there are other things. I mean, right now, one of the things that lots of states do, but including Pennsylvania, is there's public money that goes to these commercial driver's license mills, right? So that, again, because the job sucks so bad, lots of people who are licensed to drive a truck end up not doing it that long, and they get out. Good for them. But then you need more people. You need to continually replenish the pipeline. So they got public money doing that and setting these people up in some cases, not simply to go into a job that sucks, but setting them up to become a misclassified independent contractor, and to have one of these, debt peonage kind of deals, leasing a truck, which they can never quite get ahead of because they're charged such a rate that they make so little money after their expenses that they can't pay down what they ostensibly still owe on the truck. So there, again, the bottom line, this was Frank's second point. First point, could we have working people and truck drivers be part of the conversation about automated vehicles? But second point, and more immediate point, hey, if you want to worry about truck drivers, you got to worry about them here and now.
Exactly.
They are being screwed, and there are things we can do. And so, again, we're not shy about saying this, but when we said this in the State of Work in Pennsylvania, we said it in a couple of paragraphs in last year's State of Work in Pennsylvania. It's like, step one, get your head around what's happened to truck drivers in Pennsylvania. That's not that hard. Step two, and you do that two ways. And this conversation points to that. You do it partly by looking at the numbers, but you also got to talk to truck drivers. So I hope that we can get some truck drivers speaking at the listening sessions that the administration is going to have for its middle class task force. Or you could have some separate sessions where you're inviting in truck drivers. I mean, that part of what people want to do is they'd like to be acknowledged that they're being chewed up in a meat grinder.
Steve, is that they have to admit it to themselves that they're being chewed up by the meat grinder.
Well, yeah, all right. No, that's fair. And again, maybe that's part of the challenge. I mean, you and I both know that there are places where this has been admitted. That in Los Angeles, right, there's a porch campaign that the Teamsters have going, working with a lot of allies, including environmentalists. 12,000 truck drivers take stuff to and take stuff from the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. And, a decade ago, a lot of those people would be saying, I want to be an independent contractor, and don't tell me I'm misclassified. And, buying into the myth of independence, that's part of how people get led down that garden path. And those folks have come to realize that they're being independent contractors with these unfavorable terms, where a big chunk of their money per hour ends up, going right back to the company that, supposedly paying them. That's all of that is part of a system that's rigging the economy against regular people, in this case against truck drivers. So again, people have figured that out. They've actually, some workers there, 500 I think is the number I saw, have become unionized. Actually, some small companies that have actually done quite well found out that they can pay decently and pay workers' comp and not misclassify people and pay health care. And they can actually still compete because, again, in the end, there's downsides to working people ridiculous hours and having them hang on to an old truck that breaks down and pollutes the air, and so again, I'm not done enough. You have done enough because you've worked in this industry and you know lots of people who still work in this industry, but I don't know where things are in terms of truck drivers in Pennsylvania and how they think of their own situation. But so that's why part of it has to be, yeah, let's do the numbers, let's figure out what the quote facts are in terms of how screwed these folks have been in Pennsylvania for a long time. But let's also listen to these folks, and you know, then you see where it goes. But the bottom line is, there's whatever path you take, the bottom line is that if you really have a middle-class task force, then you really, one of the pieces of work, you know, maybe it's 2% of our jobs, I don't know what the right number is, but one of the pieces of work is paying attention to these folks and listening to these folks and figuring out how you can make their lives more humane in the next 10 and 20 years. You know, again, from my point of view, we could reunionize truck driving in the next 20 years. Then actually you've got a situation where labor's really at the table when it comes to the something hitting the fan, you know, with the automated vehicles and the driverless vehicles. And from a position of strength, then you could be talking about, well, let's use some of the productivity gains to bring that average hours down from 80 to 70 to 60 to 50. How about the 40-hour week?
Woo! Love that. Boy,
how about that?
A lot of truck drivers would love that.
I'm looking forward to
hearing what you guys come up with. My only criticism is you call it the middle class forum. You know, a lot of these truck drivers, not in the quote-unquote middle class. I did want to ask you one last question. Yeah. Tomorrow,
sure,
your big awards event. What's going on?
So every year we have an annual awards reception, which is, there's lots of great hors d'oeuvres, so you can basically get dinner and you walk around, and then we honor some great folks. It's just a really nice evening, and we're doing one thing we're doing a little different this year is we're honoring a whole bunch of the grassroots groups that are part of the resistance movement. So they're like the indivisible group. So we got like 14 of those from different parts of the states that are going to have a little dialogue with them during our reception part, and then we'll give each of those groups some recognition because, again, we've figured out that just producing the facts and the information is not how, unfortunately, you change the policy and the politics.
Right.
So, you know, so we're thrilled to have those folks in and get to know those folks better. And then we got a bunch of great honorees, and we got a terrific keynote. Bishop Dwayne Royster, who's the political director of one of the faith-based organizing networks in the country, PICO, People Improving Communities Through Organizing, he's going to be speaking. He's a guy who talks a lot about the moral economy, which is something that we also talk about from a slightly different but overlapping perspective. I mean, he and we both want, you know, how about an economy that sort of supports our values rather than undermines them? And how about an economy that also works, you know, for regular people, but also works? And so, again, it's two different kind of perspectives on the same basic direction that you'll get from him compared to from us. But so we're looking forward to that. And we're honoring also the Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, and Neil Bisnow of the Service Employees, and Steve Hicks of APSCUF, and then Joan Duval Flynn of the NAACP, who's
good
a
stuff.
Wonderful board members are. So it's really, it's good people. So again, people should go online, www.keystoneresearch.org. There's the rotating window that if you're a little bit patient, you'll get the link to where you can still buy a ticket. We don't turn people away, as Rick knows. So it'll be a lot of fun, and I hope people...
Good stuff. We'll get a link at the ricksmithshow.com and how people can sign up, and hopefully folks will go.
Terrific. Thanks.
Good stuff. And Steve?
We'll talk to you offline, Rick, about a couple different things.
Appreciate it. Good stuff. Dr. Steven Hertzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. The event, good times. Seriously. I'll take a look at it. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show.
A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.